Welcome to the Ayahuasca Parents Podcast.
All right.
Well, hello.
How are you?
I'm great.
I know you're dying to talk about your day.
I know. I got to chaperone for a bunch of elementary school kids today for their Lexi's in Harmony. So she sings in a choir.
Sounds painfully fun.
It was painfully fun. They did a great job. Really. And sincerely, like typically, you know, elementary school choirs, not so great. This one, wonderful.
What was the bus driver's name?
It was wonderful. His name was Don.
Don.
Mr. Don, who within like 5 minutes of being on the bus, you know, went over the PA, made a comment about no knees in the aisle. He was like, now, I told you this before. My number one rule is do not swing your knees out in the aisle. And I'm thinking, are they going to bring like a drink cart by? is that why?
Are you going to be able to enforce this, Don, while you drive?
Yeah, and it was really strange because then like 5 seconds later, he gets back on the PA again and calls out some little girl with blonde hair. He goes, this is your second warning. And I'm thinking, I don't think you really gave anyone a first warning. This is my second warning to you, you know, girl with the blonde hair. You do it again, and I'm going to pull over, and we're going to tango.
Yeah, sure you are.
That's
buddy.
What he said.
I'm sure you are.
Like me and the other parents are looking at each other like, what did we just get ourselves into?
We have a crazy bus driver.
Yeah, it's just a 20-minute ride, but I'm like, oh, no. Yeah.
Is it only a 20-minute ride?
No, we were at the we were at the convention center.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Sandy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it was definitely, exhausting.
Yeah.
Seven little girls with some really big personalities.
Yeah.
And it was like, don't lose them. It's a convention center. There's hundreds of people here.
Well, no pressure.
It was pretty good.
I'm glad you made it.
Fun. Yeah. The dynamics of elementary school kids, but yeah. I was so proud of them.
Oh, that's
good. For real. And they sounded so good.
That's good.
And of course, our daughter has a speaking part, but excuse me, because...
How'd that go?
Well, because we had limited time, they of course did the solos. So the kids that got to do the solos performed, but they didn't do the speaking parts. So the kids are coming off the stage and I'm like, great job. You guys sounded so good. Lexi comes off the stage like devastated. I didn't get to do my speaking part. I'm like, there was no time. I'm like, you get to perform like 5 more times.
She's like, but act somebody else, not me. Don't I know. Take it away from me.
Such a sweetheart. Yeah. But yeah, just doing the mom thing.
Yeah.
I try and chaperone at least once a year. It's a lot
for
of
both
work.
Of us.
Yep. I think what I said to the bus driver when I got off the bus was, you're a saint and you deserve angel wings.
And he said, I'm really grateful for the guy that invented the volume button on my hearing aids.
He goes, well, you know, they do pay me to do this, right? And I said, yeah, but not enough. And he goes, you want to know my secret? I'm like, yeah. And he goes, I have hearing aids. And I just turn him down. I was like, holy, because I sent you a video.
Yeah, it was awful. I was like,
oh my gosh.
Holy shit, I'm glad I'm home.
Well, first of all, being on a bus and I was in the back of the bus. And the back of the buses now don't have windows.
Oh.
So you might as well have just put me in a pop can and just...
Yeah. You know, pop can.
pop can and just shake me up. Yeah. I don't know.
No, it was good. Yeah. It was good. I was like...
a soda can? Whatever.
Yeah. Yep.
Anyway. So how's your day been?
It's good. You know? Grocery shopping. Made salsa.
He made some salsa. Joel has famous salsa.
Yeah, the secret is keep it simple, stupid.
Yeah.
You know, put a bunch of tomatoes in there, take out the jelly stuff and seeds, right? Because that's the acid. That
not the seeds. Those are the most medicinal.
No, not. But it doesn't make good salsa. Then you basically char all your peppers.
Right.
Pasillas.
Anaheims.
Anaheims. Serranos. Two of each. Two. One red pepper, one onion.
Some cilantro.
I think anybody's going to make this from the podcast. It'd be awesome. A bunch of cilantro, like a bunch, you know, an onion, a lot of garlic. I don't know, eight fingers of garlic. And keep in mind, I think I spent $10 on tomatoes and they're $1.50 a pound. So do your math there. That's how many tomatoes I used. Yeah. And then a lime and a half because the serrano was a little bit hot. It
was punchy.
Yeah. I don't take the seeds out of the serrano, but I take the seeds out of all the other peppers.
We like spicy.
Yeah. And then a lime and a half. Lime cuts down the heat a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then salt to taste. And then like a cap full of white vinegar.
Yep.
Boom.
It really is. It's the best salsa.
Yeah.
And I crave your salsa.
So, you know, thanks for tuning in for your daily recipe on the Ayahuasca Parents podcast.
That's right. That's right. And you wanted to talk about the earthing sheet. How's sleep been?
Amazing. It's weird.
Yeah.
And again, if it's placebo, who cares? It's working. Feels good.
Well, but we tested it with the, is it a DC volt meter?
It's a volt meter. Negative AC, DC, hertz, volts, you know. This, that, whatever. Yeah.
So
it does it all.
So legit, when we're not grounded, you know, we get one reading from our bodies.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, it's in the 8 to 10 volts on average when you're not grounded. And when you're grounded, it's
0.014.
It's like, it's like an eighth of a volt.
Yeah.
But I think when you've been grounded for a while, you can actually get it to zero.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it's dependent on body fat, not to body shame us, but
that's rude.
Well,
I'm like, I'm not fat. You're not fat.
But our kid is super lean and muscular, and when he grounded himself on the sheet, straight to zero.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if it has something to do with fat content and to why we're holding on to a couple tenths of a volt. Who cares?
Yeah. I have no
Who cares? All I know is I feel better. I have a varicose vein in my leg behind my knee and the pressure's gone.
Yeah.
Like gone. Like I usually don't have pressure, you know, in the summertime, no storms, that kind of thing. Yeah, it's gone.
What about your nervous legs?
No nervous legs.
Yeah.
So it's taken care of both of those. Yeah. So I, you know. I don't sell these, so you'll have to.
I'll put a link.
Yeah.
I'll put a link below.
Everybody should get one. Like what it's done to my sleep and my varicose vein. I mean, I'm having a hard time waking up because I'm so comfortable.
Right.
Why would a grounding sheet make me comfortable? It's not the sheet. It's the grounding part. And it's like, okay.
Well, I'm not, I don't think I moved last night. So I woke up almost creaky. I think I just got 8 hours of sleep.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't remember sleeping. That's always the best kind of sleep.
Yeah.
And then I have like some inflammation in one of my fingers. This is going to sound strange, but in just one of my fingers, I just have, you know, almost like arthritic symptoms.
Yeah.
And I've had none of that in the morning. Usually it's the worst in the morning where you can't make a fist.
A freaking grounding sheet. Like...
Well, again, like when you look at the science behind it, it makes sense. It really does make sense.
No, it makes sense. It's just, it's one of those things that everyone should have. You should just have.
Well, life is so complicated. Everything's so complicated that when something seems so simple, it just seems like woo woo. You're like, no, this is too simple. Snake oil.
Somebody's making shit up trying to sell me a sheet.
Right. Like, come on, man. And like, you're looking at the threads, you're like, oh yeah, sure. Those are silver threads. You know,
that's why I pulled out the voltmeter.
I know.
And I was like, well, it's grounding. So that's for sure. Yeah. Like it's grounding. Legit is grounding.
Well, and I think with anything, you know, as long as you're consistent, at some point you're going to get a little bit of benefit from it just from being consistent. And with a sheet, you are obviously going to be consistent if you sleep every day, which we do. So,
yeah, I mean, you know, without a grounding sheet, they say, you know, ground your body 20, 30 minutes a day.
Yeah.
You should be good to go. So if we're sleeping 6 hours, 8 hours, whatever it is, should be bonus.
Yeah.
Should give, you know, cause it's supposedly the science behind it, right? Is it builds up your white blood cells?
Well, it has to do with the electrons that we gain from being grounded. So because we wear rubber soles and we don't have any of this contact with the earth that is rich in electrons, we're out of balance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But what was that little video doing that science guy showed? Something to do with your white blood cells, and it's basically
when you have inflammation. Rid of the bad cell.
Yeah. So right. It had everything to do with inflammation, and it was basically showing how your inflammation goes down. And you know, lots of people report weight loss, and you know, I'd be fine with that. I didn't buy a sheet to lose weight, but you know,
yeah,
a lot of people report, you know, arthritis going away. A lot of people report nervous legs going away. So
yeah, and across the board, everybody slept better.
Yeah, and so I read all that, then I got the sheet. So again, if it's placebo, I don't care. It's working. So
yeah, we're gonna give it 7 days, and if things are continuing on the trajectory that they're at, then we're gonna buy one for the whole family. I tell you what, our cute little puppy. He sure likes it. Like, he doesn't want
to... Oh, he just goes to bed, sleep right away.
Yeah, he doesn't want to get off the bed to a point where he'll be playing with us and we'll be like, do you want to go to bed in your own bed? And he, like, closes his eyes and pretends to...
Like he's asleep.
To be asleep. Like, maybe they'll think I didn't hear them.
Bleh. Little...
He's so cute.
He's awesome.
He's so wonderful.
He's awesome.
Never thought of myself as a dog person. Always sort of afraid to have a dog because, you know, of having a dog when we were kids and it was just neglected.
Yeah.
And so I never wanted that responsibility. And I love animals, like love, love, love them, even so much so that I don't eat them. I don't know, the idea of having a dog was kind of stressful, but.
He's the easiest thing.
Yeah. He really is.
I still can't believe how quickly he was trained.
Well, here's where I'm at is that first of all, it's such a wonderful love that you know, like your heart opens up for a dog, unlike mm-hmm. how it opens up for a child or, you know, a partner, you know, or a lover, you know, it's a different type of love. And, I was today when I was chaperoning, cause I'm usually around Cubby quite a bit. We've named our dog Dr. Cubby.
Doctor.
Yes, Dr. Cubby. But
he's just as qualified as any Western doctor.
That's right. He earned his. All right.
We just lost half our audience because we only Western doctors like to listen to us. So.
That's right. we only attract allopathic doctors. No, I'm kidding. Only kidding. But anyways, I found myself today at the field trip like thinking about, you know, how I missed kissing his furry little head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, he's a cool
and
dog.
He's a standard poodle. People don't know this. Standard poodles have really long hair. And it's their owners that make them look ridiculous.
Yep.
Which we won't be doing.
Nope.
I'm not shaving him like that. That's just
he's going to look shaggy.
But he does, you know, they're these posh dogs. So he's got this very pointed muzzle. And he just likes to sit there and like judge you with his like pointed little nose.
He prances.
I know, I love it. Man, he's so proper. We've bell trained him, so he runs to the back sliding glass door and rings a bell when he needs to go outside.
Yeah, and the fun part about that is when he's overwhelmed, straight to the door. Yeah. It's like when little kids are like, he's like, you know, I'm good playing with these guys. Yeah. I got to go outside.
Yep, and he'll like box the bell at that point, like get me out.
Yeah, he aggressively hits the and he's looking at you like, bitch, we had a deal. Get over here and open the door.
You said I ring the bell, you open the door.
Yeah, I don't know why you're standing there looking at me. Open the door.
Yeah, he's just so, so sweet. And his little personality that's coming out is just adorable.
Yeah.
So, well, the only thing that it just, I don't know, cracks me up or wears me out is when he gets the zoomies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's just like, flying around the house.
Whoa. Like, there's a lot of zoom going on here.
Well, that's good. Gets it out so he sleeps.
Yeah, good point. Well, so
should we talk about other stuff?
Yeah, should we talk about the ayahuasca parents podcast for a
minute? Yeah, let's do that. So on our last episode, we talked about kind of what led you to your first psychedelic.
Yep.
So I think that's what we're going to do with me today.
Let's do it.
So we're going to break these up into, I don't know, sections?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Why not?
Okay.
This whole episode will be about Joel and kind of your childhood, things you've struggled with, and
you know. So, I mean, You know, it's funny because, like, in hindsight, I can explain a lot of the behavioral issues I had, clearly, that ayahuasca helped. But I guess we'll get to that when we get to that.
Right.
So as a little kid, I had anger issues. And,
what do you mean by that? Like, anger issues? How does a little kid have anger issues?
I was angry all the time. So starting at 5 years old, you know, I just was mischief. I got into stuff. You know, I remember one time, you know, we lived in a duplex, and I remember running over to the neighbor's house. She was like some old lady. Her name was Lula.
Mm-hmm.
And she was old. She always wore those like flowered house coats, you know. She had like gray permed hair. Mm-hmm. So, no, I'm like 4. I'd go run, bang on her screen door, and then run and hide and watch her open the door and get pissed that no one was there. And finally, she figured it out, and she called my mom. And, you know, that was like the first time I remember. I thought it was fun, and I was playing with a neighbor kid, and we both thought it was fun. And that was the, you know, my mom was, that was one of my first times I can remember my mom basically like, wait till your dad gets home.
Oof.
Yeah, 4, right? She likes to tell stories about how she used to try to beat my ass with spoons until the spoons broke. And I just look at her like, what are you doing, lady?
Mm-hmm.
Then she would spank, you know, and she stopped spanking because it would hurt her hand and not me. So, you know, it just came from your, I would say at the time with these, you know, boomers, they're traditionally, you know, spankers and slappers, right? I mean, they are.
Right. Yeah.
Most people our age, within our 8, you know, with Generation X, I guess, if you talk to them about their parents, there's a few that are like, oh, it was great. It was a fairy tale, blah, blah, blah. You know, but there was a lot of people that were like, nah, you know, we got spanked. We got slapped. It is what it is. So 4 years old, that started to happen. 5, I had anger problems and wet the bed problems and, you know, not liking the babysitter's problems. And, you know, it was kind of a handful, I guess. I had a younger sibling who's 2 years younger than me. My mom likes to talk about how when he was 2 and I was 4, I'd torture him. I don't know. I don't remember that. But then she got pregnant with twins. So when I was 4 and she was 2, which, you know, that's not fun, you know, because all of a sudden, you know, I think maybe some of my anger problems came from just being neglected. Like, how do you have a 4, a 2, and then 2 newborns? I don't know.
Well, and she was bedridden for quite a bit of time.
Yeah, so we stayed at my grandma's house for a few months. That was, you know, fun.
So you were legit just kind of ignored or... Yep.
Or whatever.
And the responsibility of watch Brian, right?
Yeah. So growing up, you know, I'd get in trouble at school and I didn't give a shit about teachers. I'd talk back all the time. You weren't respectful to me. I wasn't respectful to you. I didn't care. You know, I just had a little chip on my shoulder, you know, and I was big for my age. And so there were times I get picked on by older kids. So I had to learn how to be scrappy. So, you know, I like to joke around. I grew up in the hood. I didn't grow up in the hood, but I grew up in a lower class, middle class neighborhood. You know, it was pretty cheap at the time. You know, it's one of those neighborhoods that went downhill quickly and now it's back to just being a normal old neighborhood, you know, but
right.
For a time, because it was so cheap to live there, like every gangster's parents would buy a house there. So, you know, over the years, get in trouble and doing who knows what, from getting in trouble at school to I started having a stealing problem. I was really good at it. So that was the problem. So when, you know, a couple of times I get caught and I get in trouble with the police and have to go to juvie and that kind of stuff. And, you know, every time I get in trouble, it was like I got spanked, I got slapped, I got pushed, I got this, I got that. And it wasn't really until I was an adult. I remember being at my parents' house or being at my sister's house and we're all sitting around kind of reminiscing about childhood. And I was basically like, I don't know what the fuck you guys are talking about, but mine was kind of shitty. You guys don't remember? And it was like the first time we ever talked about it.
Right.
And then they started putting in their 2 cents and which actually helped me kind of remember how it was. And that was, I took the brunt of the punishment.
Right.
You know, so my sisters don't really remember being spanked or slapped. You know, they were, I know they were, but Brian, not too much, a little bit, but I got it all the time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that just went on. My parents had me in talk therapy. I had to, you know, figure out why I was so angry. And, you know, I got by in school. I'm pretty intelligent and I could do good in school if I wanted to, but I didn't care. You know, I barely graduated, not because I wasn't smart enough, but because I barely tried.
Right.
You know, the bullshit with my dad kind of came to a head when I was 18.
So when you say spanked by your dad, like, is that really what you mean? Like, do you feel like
that? Well, I don't, he didn't punch me. So when I say spanked, it's like an open hand. It's a slap or it's a hit you on the back of your ass as hard as he can.
Right.
Kind of thing. You know, push, grab you by the head, you know.
Yeah.
Just be, you know, he's a little short, stocky guy, you know, and, you know, I know he's the youngest and I know he got, you know, pretty much tortured by his siblings. So I know where it came from. I know his dad was a dick. I never met my grandpa because he died before I was born. But I mean, you know, like I care why you're treating me like crap. All I'm thinking about, you're treating me like crap. So we didn't really have a relationship. My dad would support me with sports, sorta. You know, he took me to all my soccer games. You know, I tell you that one story about my basketball where I tried so hard to make the team and I didn't make it in junior high because of, if you can believe it, politics. Make it in my sophomore year. You know, I'm not the best on the team, but I'm not the worst. You know, so I'm playing. My dad finally shows up to a game and it's one of the games that I play garbage time in. Ugh. You know, and he basically was like, that was a waste of my time. I can't believe I got off work early for that crap. And then, you know, he basically never came to a game again. And to be honest with you, I quit trying for basketball. I was like, well, I don't know why I let that get to me, but it got to me.
Well, yeah, because you're an impressionable teenager that wants dad's love. And dad showed his love by supporting you with sports. So to have him be so critical like that, like,
it's really just rude.
Like, yeah, it's so, you know, it's so fascinating too, like, you know, being parents ourselves and analyzing how we do things versus our parents, like the things that our parents did or said to us when we were children. I mean, like, if anyone were to do those types of things to them, they'd be in prison. Like, it would be appalling. And they'd be like, that is appalling. Did you hear
it was
how so-and-so treated so-and-so, you know? And yet for children, that's appropriate. It's this, it's this weird, like, mental illness, like, and it's a collective mental illness with a lot of people where it's like, it's okay to smack around, spank, hit, beat, scream at, emotionally, verbally assault and abuse children.
Yeah.
But you can't do that to an adult.
I mean, it must have, my dad must have been pretty violent because there were plenty of times where my mom was trying to get him to off me.
What do you mean off you?
To stop.
Oh, to get off you. I'm like, to off you.
No, like, just to stop. And, you know, my recollection of that is just cowering and covering up, right? If you're getting punched, you're going to protect yourself.
That was after she'd sick him on you, right? Like, she'd use dad as a weapon.
Yeah. 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 She was awesome.
Classy.
She was a yeller. She was a yeller, you know. I can remember when she got on antidepressants because then mom became numb instead of a bitch.
Instead of screaming all the time?
Ah, she screamed all the time. We used to clean our house as a family on Saturdays. Mm-hmm. And my dad coincidentally would be like, all right, I'm going to go do the grocery shop and have fun with mom, you know. And mom would just yell nonstop. And, you know, we're teenagers. I'm a teenager. Well, when I was a teenager, she'd wake me up at like 10, time to get up and clean, and just yell, 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 you know, and just slave driver. She was just nasty. She was just nasty. And she became, you know, so kind of where the, kind of how, you know, it's interesting when you become an adult and there's like this weird transition where like all of a sudden mom, dad are starting to be nice to you and then you're not holding them accountable.
Right. We're almost conditioned to be like, oh, they just smacked us around a bit. That's why I asked you that question was like, is that true? Like, because the stories you've told me, they're not. It's not just like, oh, I'm getting a little smack on the bum.
No, I mean, it hurt.
Yeah.
I mean, it hurt.
When you're getting chased around the house.
Yeah, it's usually like dad's coming at you. You're running. You're running for cover, you know. No, it hurt. I mean, I don't think I ever had a bruise. I don't think that matters. I think that's why he used an open hand.
Right.
Or maybe that's just, you know, maybe he didn't consciously think about that. But
maybe he learned that while he was getting his degree in psychology.
Yeah, or teaching parenting classes. Yeah.
Open hand hitting doesn't leave bruises.
Did you hear what I said?
Yeah,
I heard teaching you. Parenting classes. There was a time where my parents decided to offer parenting classes to the neighborhood when I was like 10. I'm like, what the fuck? Parenting classes? Like, yeah. You're a shitty parent. Weirdest thing. Yeah, both my parents are psychology majors. Well done. You know, the last time my dad, you know, and I've told you this before because it's a regret, but, you know, I was 18, graduated from high school. I think it's the summer after I graduated from high school. I'm outside playing basketball with my friends. I have a younger sister who I can't stand is talking shit from the window and trying to embarrass me. And I lost my shit. I went in there and she basically said a bunch of stuff to egg me on, locked her bedroom door, and I beat it down. So at that point I knew, well, all right, shit's going to go down tonight. So I'm going to leave and let him come home and like lose his shit. And then he can call me and then I'll come home and maybe we can have a civil conversation.
Wow.
So, you know, I came home and, you know, he was a screamer. If that's the other thing, like if he wasn't, you know, hitting you, he was yelling at you.
Right.
Like in your face, yelling at you, which was, you know, it's intimidating, right? So, you know, that day he came home, he's yelling at me and I'm basically like, you know, I don't know what I said, but I said something that triggered him and he just lunged for me and I started running around the kitchen table and I stopped and I turned around and I'm like, bring it on, bitch. I'm bigger than you now. And he stopped, you know,
he's like, oh shit. He figured it out.
Yeah. One of my regrets is I didn't kick his ass.
Yeah. I know you talk about that a lot. You wish that you really had
just kicked his ass.
Yeah.
Cause you know what, when you're beating up a kid from age, I don't know, I have no idea, 2, 3, 4. I don't know when he first hit me, to when I'm 18. Come on.
Right.
Dude needs his ass kicked.
Yeah.
You know, he's almost 70. So I'm not going to be beating his ass now, but I don't talk to him. But, you know, not a nice guy. So 18, you know, we get past that. My dad actually is like, you know what? She admitted to everything she did. I don't blame you. Why don't you guys split the door? You both pay for half a door. Put the door back up. We'll call it good. I'm like, okay, that's fair. So, you know, I was somebody that, like, I was always really good with money. I always had plenty of money throughout high school between, you know, stealing stuff and, you know, always having a job. I remember, you know, it was springtime right before I turned 19. And, my dad was, it's about time to file taxes. All my W-2s came in the mail. And when I say all, I had like 5 jobs over that year. And my dad's like pissed at me. And I'm like, what do you care, dude? I got plenty of money. I just get bored. I go find another job. You know, that was a pretty big fight, but it was just verbal. And when I was 19, I moved out. And I was basically like, I'm moving out. I moved back home when I was 20 and then I met a girl. I moved out with her. So it was kind of back and forth from age 20 to 22. And then right before my 23rd birthday, I bought my own place. I moved out and never went back.
Right. And when you think about, like, you know, transitioning from young adult to man,
mm-hmm.
like what were some of the things about yourself that you were struggling with?
Anger.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, for sure. Anger, you know. I mean, to get super deep. I mean, you know, I always knew that somebody got to me sexually. So I was struggling, you know, as a, you know, young teenager, you know, like 12, 13, not wanting to like molest everybody, you know?
Right. So just sort of that, like a lot of us that have been molested,
yeah,
over-sexualized at a very young age.
Yep.
And, you know,
but I had something in my head that was like, don't do that.
But you didn't know what, right. But
I didn't know what it was.
But you didn't know what it was, what the trauma was.
Nope.
And your parents weren't any help.
No, I mean, this is jumping ahead, but my mom likes to, you know, create different stories as to what would have happened.
Right. So she had told me something. She told 2 other sisters another story. Couldn't keep the story straight.
Couldn't keep the story straight. You know, keep in mind, I was in talk therapy from,
since you were,
I
like
think, age 4 or 5.
Yeah.
Till, you know, some gaps in between there where we'd stop and then I'd go back. But, you know, when I was 18, I stopped going, clearly. I went back a little bit as an adult, you know, on my own dime, but, you know, I was in talk therapy and I don't think talk therapy works. It teaches you, you talk about it so much that you get tired of talking about it.
Well, it almost
just wears you out.
It strengthens the loop. It strengthens the neuroconnective pathways to the trauma.
Yeah.
For some people, I know that it's cathartic, but for the majority of people, it's almost like being re-traumatized.
Over and over and over and over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At least that was my experience too.
Well, so I think, you know, I struggled with, and then I struggled with depression and anxiety, you know, which like everyone does,
mm-hmm.
you know, for the most part.
Which was the worst one for you, anxiety or depression?
Oh. Probably depression.
Yeah.
Yeah. Depression and anger. You know, I think those are two different ends of the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the anger always came, always kind of, you know, I always just had a chip on my shoulder. You know, you mess with me, I'll mess with you back kind of thing. It was revengeful.
And kind of explosive from 0 to 100 in a second flat.
Yeah. You know, which was a blessing and a curse, you know, helped me become a very good manager as far as like, I just had everybody's respect, you know, but I lost my shit a couple times on employees, you know, mm-hmm. and other people. I've lost my shit on neighbors. I've lost my shit on, you know, people at the grocery store. Remember that lady's dog is like pissed on the floor in front of us. And I'm like calling her out in Walmart of all white trash places. You know, I mean, like, you know, just no, you know, and I just no words were off limits and I'd say whatever I wanted to. And I didn't care.
Did you ever think to yourself, like, where is this coming from? Why do I struggle so badly? It looks like other people have a pause. I don't have a pause. Like, what's wrong with me?
No, because it was working for me.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, the depression, I would always go, why do I have these times where, like, just the world feels like it's ending?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was the time where my dad basically sat me down and was like, no, you know, here's the thing. Your mental illness runs in our family. Gotta get you some pills, you know? So, you know, it was, that's just kind of the support, you know, everybody was like, just go get on your pills, you know, finally I got on pills
mm-hmm.
and it just numbs you.
Yeah. Did you feel like it ever really helped?
Well, it doesn't. It just numbs you.
Right.
You just don't react. It gives you a pause,
mm-hmm.
but you're on permapause.
But did you,
know? You still get mad, but it takes a lot more to get you mad.
Did you feel like that you burst through the meds to a point where you had to either up the dose or
all the time
switch meds? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think I switched meds 3 times.
Yeah. Talking to, you know, a couple dozen people now, men primarily that have dealt with like explosive rage and anger
mm-hmm.
and being put on pills. It seems like that it's crazy to me that any sort of medical doctor would put anybody that struggles with anger on antidepressants because they all pop through them.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what the dosage. And I think I talked to one gentleman that was on more than 80 milligrams per day.
Yeah.
I want to say of Lexapro. I think it was Lexapro. And I mean, like he was saying that about every 6 weeks, you know, and I mean, at some point it's crazy as a medical doctor, you would think that at some point you go, maybe this isn't going to help. You know?
Nah, because they get kickbacks and get to go to Disneyland the more, no. you know, the more fancy things they prescribe.
Right.
No, I mean, they just didn't work. I mean, you know how infuriating it is for, you know, to think you're doing something, you're taking something that's making you a better person. And then to have, you know, your wife go, did you take your meds today? I'm like, oh, okay. Am I being an asshole?
Yeah.
All right. Better look at those dosages again, you know, because I never missed a day with my meds. I was pretty on it. You know, but, you know, I mean, that went on till, you know, right before you took your mushrooms, right? So
how did you find, I mean, because in reality, and I'm not sure I know all the ins and outs of this either, but how did you find plant medicines? Because that's how we found them was through you. You're the one that came across them.
Well, you know, it podcasts started to become popular and I started listening to the Joe Rogan podcast when he was like, I think episode 10. I mean, it was a shit show. Uh-huh. It was awesome. He never had guests on except for his friends.
Right.
You know, it was mostly him and a bunch of comedians. But his comedian friends and him, you know, were dabbling in psychedelics because it was making, you know, and they felt like it was making them better people. So I just kept listening to, you know, their stories. And, you know, a lot of it was sensational, you know, saw like, you know, jaguars. I saw this, I saw that, you know, just, I was
did it,
like.
Did it ping though for you? Like,
no, it sounded scary.
Okay.
Yeah, it sounded scary. I'm like, I don't, you know, I dabbled in, you know, cannabis, but never had a mushroom ever. I accidentally took acid one time because somebody gave it to me and I just held onto it in my hand and I absorbed it.
Oops.
Yeah. All of a sudden, you know,
it was weird, horrible shit.
Yeah, it was terrible. I mean, and just the, you know, the stomach cramps I had and stuff getting off of it. I was like, yeah, I'm never doing that again, you know. And cannabis, you know, it's like I dinked around with it, but it just, you know, never was. I never looked at it as a medicine. I looked at it as a way of getting high. I mean, clearly I have different, you know, thoughts on cannabis now, but.
Well, when I met you, not only did you not drink a lot, you did drink, but you were self-proclaimed, I don't like beer. I really don't like getting drunk.
I only drink when I went out.
Right. And
never kept it in the house.
You really never drank diet soda. You're welcome for me getting you addicted to that. And you really never drank coffee either.
Right.
You were a pretty sober guy when I met you, right. You in just about every way.
Yeah. I don't really feel like, I mean, I have food issues where I eat more than I should, I think, like most people.
I'm like everyone.
Right. But I never, I've been turned off by alcohol since day one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had a brief stint in the music business, which had me being in bars and had me being at lots of fancy dinners and things like that. And it just got to the place where it was like, might as well.
Mm-hmm.
Might as well. Instead of coming up with an excuse as to why I don't want some, whatever, just mm-hmm. drink it. It's not a big deal. Just find the things I like and go with that, you know? And so, you know, but, you know, I always felt fat after I drank, you know, this. And I was
fucking sticking to my bones.
Yeah, I just gained 30 pounds. And you're like, you drank 2 beers. I'm like, I know.
Sticking to my bones.
You know, and I never really liked beer in a bottle, but really didn't like it in a stein either. Like, I just, mm-hmm. you couldn't make me happy. I'm like more like the fruity girl drinks that people would call them girl drinks. But
right.
It's really just drinking fruit punch with vodka, you know?
Right. Sprite and vodka.
Yeah, just, you know, never was my thing. Coffee, you know, I was just starting, crazy enough to think I was just starting to drink coffee before I met you.
Well, you didn't even have a coffee maker. I was like, what?
I went to Starbucks.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, that started when you know, I was, you know, I moved downtown and I'm living in a really trendy area and people are asking me out to coffee and I couldn't just keep drinking hot chocolate.
Yeah.
I couldn't do it.
Or tea.
I remember the first time I had coffee and it was, I went on a business trip to New York and they basically like, how do you like your coffee? And I'm in front of, this was in New Jersey. Actually, we went to New York and then the meeting was in New Jersey. So I got this like New Jersey guy, you know, looking like Tony Soprano going, how you like your coffee? I'm like, cream and sugar. I don't know. Do it. He goes, how much sugar? 3. You know, he put cubes in it. I'm like, 3. And I drank it and it was disgusting.
Yeah.
But I really liked the zing I got, you know. So I started drinking them heavy sugar, you know. But yeah, no, I mean, for the most part, I wasn't into anything.
So what?
I think I had edible brownies once.
Oh, yeah.
And that wasn't fun either, you know. So.
So what was the podcast that you listened to where you were like, oh my gosh, like I should pick up a laptop, load a video and go show my wife.
Well, the first podcast was the Amber Lion when she came back from Bahrain.
Oh.
And she was talking about how she got captured. She got tortured. And Rogan just kept talking about mushrooms, 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 mushrooms.
Was he talking about mushrooms or was he talking about ayahuasca?
He was talking about mushrooms. Oh, okay. He's never pushed ayahuasca on anybody because he's never taken
it. Oh, that's right. That's right. You're right. You're right.
So he was talking about mushrooms and he was talking about, And she was talking about, she knew, she goes, I have PTSD. And so they were breaking down the subject of PTSD.
She had like a gun like shoved in her face. She saw someone die, right? One of her crew members. Was that right? One of them.
I don't remember if she saw somebody die, but they were like, she definitely was being manhandled. She definitely had guns. She was tied up. She was.
There was like, they were hiding their USB sticks or whatever to.
Yeah, they're just still trying to report on the story. You know?
And they finally get home and she was CNN working for CNN. Yeah. And they show them everything and they nixed the story.
They nixed the story because Bahrain government was an advertiser on CNN.
And that's when she realized, oh my gosh, like
the world's fucked.
Yeah, well, and the media that
bought and paid for.
Right. Yep. And that there was no such thing anymore as journalism.
Yep. Yep.
They were told to be quiet.
Exactly.
Okay.
That's a whole nother podcast.
I know, right?
Yeah. But, you know, she just kept talking about how much pain she's in. You know, and she's doing talk therapy. And I think she was talking, I think Rogan was trying to get her to do yoga or something. She was talking about, you know, it's been a while since I watched it, but I remember she was just talking about all these things she's just trying to do to cope, you know, and she was talking about how she'd, you know, wake up, nightmares. She doesn't trust people. She's small spaces. I mean, you know, I could be getting some of these details wrong, but I mean, that was the gist of it. Basically, like, my life is hell. And I have nothing to show for the hell.
Yeah. And I think she said that she suffered from symptoms of PTSD.
Yeah.
Yeah. Post-traumatic stress symptoms. And if I remember right, too, during that interview, there's a pivotal point when it starts to really sink in when people are hearing about plant medicines, where they get awkwardly quiet and they almost stop blinking and they're just staring. And I remember that part.
Oh, she's zoned in. Yeah.
Where for sure. She literally was just quiet. Mm-hmm. And just like was staring at Joe.
Yeah. Yeah. She was like all ears. She was like, tell me more.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that's, and he's name dropping people. He's name dropping Maps and he's name dropping, Rick Doblin. And you know, I think he,
and so you're hearing this,
I'm hearing this and I'm taking notes. Cause the first thing I thought of when she's describing how her quality of life, I thought of you.
Mm.
And so it was like, I think that night I went, before I even showed you the podcast, I think I went, do you think you have PTSD from your childhood? I remember you looked at me like, what?
Well, I think I said, well, isn't that just something that, you know, people that go to war get? I mean, that's really what everyone was conditioned into thinking, was post-traumatic stress disorder was something that was only a diagnosis for people that went to war and experienced war.
Yeah. Yeah. But they broke it down in a way that I thought of you when they broke it down.
Yeah. My point is that that's what most people think about PTSD. Right. You immediately think, oh, that's something that soldiers suffer from.
Yeah.
And when you go to a medical doctor or a psychiatrist or a psychologist, and I've been to a bunch of them, when you tell them, okay, I was horribly tortured as a child, beaten and abused in every way possible, right, they diagnose you with depression and anxiety, never right, saying, oh, you know, you might have post-traumatic stress disorder.
I don't think they know how to break the word down. Post means after.
Traumatic
stress yeah, from a trauma.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And actually, you know, cause I've taken some classes from, you know, for the work that I do, I've taken some classes on PTSD and yeah, working with vets. They don't even call it a disorder.
Yeah. It's just PTS.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if we don't say PTSD, then we'll get comments of, it's PTSD, not PTS. It's,
well,
like, it's actually sure, the people that are, you know, immersed in this, it's PTS.
Yeah.
It isn't a disorder because it can be cured.
100%.
Yeah. 100%.
They're starting to realize that.
Yeah.
There's way too many studies that have happened. So
at some point you then heard the name Rick Doblin, maps.org, and you Googled it.
Yeah. Well, shortly after that, if I remember right, he had Rick Doblin on.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
I don't think I ever saw that one.
That's good.
Not the first really good one.
Yeah. Shortly after that, I think he had him on and that was pretty eye opening too. I thought I might have sent you that one back then. No, maybe not.
I don't remember watching that. I just remember,
it just popped in my head. So
yeah, you may have, it's been a while,
but everything was like, I had never in a million years. Well, first of all, I didn't know what ayahuasca was. Like, you know, I learned about ayahuasca on the Joe Rogan podcast, cause he had one of his buddies, you know, Aubrey Marcus, come on. His name wasn't Aubrey Marcus then.
Yeah, I can't remember what his
real name
was.
Because
yeah,
ayahuasca told him to or something. You know, sometimes we do weird things, you know, on the psychedelics. But
well, what were you thinking when you heard that possibly a psychedelic could cure mental illness or trauma?
It pinged right. I didn't even give it thought. It just pinged right.
You were just knew that, oh, yeah, nope, that's true.
Yeah.
That's fascinating.
Yeah. I just knew it was true. And, you know, so, I remember I talked to you about the PTSD, after the Amber Lyon podcast, but I don't think I made you watch anything until she was on a second time. I was blown away. I still kind of get choked up when I think about the difference in her. Mm-hmm. Like, you could just see it.
It was palpable.
She walked in like a glowing, you know, and I remember Rogan's like, whoa, what, where have you been?
Yeah.
You know? And, see, you remember that she did ayahuasca. I remember that she did mushrooms, but either way, she did one of the two, or maybe she did both. I don't know.
I don't know. I just remember her saying that she had, packed up her things and just picked a center. And like, she didn't really even, she really just grabbed a bag from her trunk. So she wasn't really organized. She had to borrow things from people.
Oh, you're right.
And then she got on a plane and went to Peru. It was literally just like,
I remember now, she went to ayahuasca. She actually had a shaman that was like inappropriate with her.
Yeah.
He was like hitting on her or something.
No, he inappropriately touched her while she was in the ceremony.
Is that what happened?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, when she came back, that's when I was like, you need to watch this. At the same time, I'm talking at work with, I'm talking to the subject. You know, I started forming a little group because, you know, we tried a little bit of cannabis and I'm like, holy shit, this is good stuff. These guys at work did the same thing. We were talking about how our minds were thinking differently, you know, because anytime you smoke cannabis, right, you start waxing philosophically about how the world was created. You experience how all your senses are amplified, you know, your hearing, your sight, your smell, your taste. I mean, everything's just so there's a lot of conversations about that. And then we started talking about mushrooms at work. And that's when this, there was a couple guys at work that had lots of experience with mushrooms. Mm-hmm. So when, you know, I showed it to you and you were like, yeah, let's do that. I mean, those were the first guys I called. Okay. How can I get some? And, you know, they knew a grower and they put me in touch with the grower and he was months out.
And they'd never done a medicinal dose though. None of them had ever heard of a heroic dose.
No.
This was like one or two, maybe 1 gram.
Exactly. Most people only do 1 or 2 grams. They get pretty colors. They, you know, you just feel so much love. You feel that it's that serotonin boost that you get, you know, you think about heart-based stuff, right? You think about nature and you want to be in nature and you observe it. It really, like when you take a small dose, just puts you in the now, right? You're just squarely present.
Yeah. I've never taken a small dose, so I have no idea.
Well, I have, and I've microdosed and you feel love and you see pretty colors and you know, just everything's vivid. Mm. It's like you've been swimming in shitty water and then you changed your fishbowl water. Mm. You know, that's what it's like on a small dose, you know? You know, we talked about it and, you know, I think I kept telling you like, we're going to have to wait. And then, you know, just had a feeling that there was no wait. And I just kept asking and asking, you guys got to help me find some, you know? So, you know, we found you some. And, since we already talked about what happened with your experience, the outcome of me watching you go through your experience, I'm like, well, I want to experience that. Mm-hmm. You know, I wasn't having the play rewind loops like you were. Mm-hmm. I was just acting them out, really, if you think about it. You know, I was just angry, mm-hmm. or depressed or anxiety. So after you did yours and I, you know, that grower finally had some, I bought some. And I remember my first experience was not great. It was just, you know, it was bland. It wasn't real eventful. But my second experience was pretty good. And the mushrooms in the beginning worked with me kind of different. You know, I think, you know, everybody's different and it depends on where you're at in the time and space when you take it,
what you need.
And I think the first time I took, and keep in mind, first time you took it, you weren't on antidepressants. First time I did take it, I was on antidepressants. First time, it wasn't awful. It just was uneventful. The second time I took it, I had a knowingness that I need to get the fuck off these antidepressants. Mm-hmm. That was literally the biggest takeaway. Get off the antidepressants. Mm-hmm. Remember that?
Yeah,
I do. Like, I got to get off these.
Well, I remember that. And I also remember a flare up of just anger. And something that a lot of people don't talk about after you work with a plant medicine, sometimes if you have something that, you know, like a quality or a characteristic or behavior, so whatever it is, so if it's like an addiction to alcohol or if it's cigarettes or if it's drugs or if it's anger, whatever it is, you know, some people are actually addicted to anxiety or, you know, I mean, like just a plethora of things.
Yeah.
Sometimes the plants will exacerbate it. It will bring it up. I realize this with ayahuasca too. This is another reason why you don't do ayahuasca just one time and it works in stages, because sometimes those behaviors come front and center.
Yeah.
And they come front and center so that you can look at them, so that they're in your conscious awareness. You dig them out of the subconscious,
exactly,
subconscious, unconscious space. You bring them into your awareness so that you can actually analyze it and look at it thoroughly.
I mean, that's an important part. These things, do not do the work for you.
Right. You do not drink ayahuasca and the next day everything is shits and giggles.
No, they show you things and it kind of helps you see the perspectives and the things you need to see to heal it. I mean, it does some physical things to your brain, clearly, but
it's a crazy amount of work.
Yeah.
So you get out of it what you put into it.
Yeah.
Just like everything else.
Yeah.
But what you are armed with, people are like, well, then why would you take ayahuasca? Well, because of the incredible amount of perspective that you can gain in a very short amount of time.
Well,
it's up to you whether or not you're going to integrate those things.
Yeah. I mean, you know, ayahuasca for me was the most, that first time, you know, four cups.
Right.
It's the most profound experience I've ever had in my life, ever.
Yeah, me too.
In the history of ever.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
It trumped having babies.
I was like, getting married was awesome.
Yeah.
Having
babies.
Having babies was awesome. But being a better human just makes being married and having babies more awesome. Like, it has so to
true.
Trump it. Like, you hate to say it, but like, fixing yourself was the best thing you could do.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
So
your biggest takeaway and aha was, I got to get off my antidepressants. So what was that like?
Hell.
Yeah.
It was hell. You know, so how many, and there were times when I would try to just back my dose off because I'm like, it just doesn't feel right that I should be taking this much. And then I'd back it off and then I'd become angry and shitty. And
so do you remember how much you were on? Was it 40 milligrams a day?
Yeah, it was 40, but I cut it. I cut that in half first.
That's
I
right.
went from 40 to 20 because 40 didn't feel good anyways.
Mm-hmm.
I went from 40 to 20 and, basically, I started cutting them back. I want to say I started cutting them back in probably 1st of May.
Yeah, so we knew we were going to go to ayahuasca. We just didn't. We hadn't picked out a center until July.
Well, no.
No, that is true. I didn't find the center until July.
Well, when I say we knew we were going to ayahuasca, I didn't know.
Oh, okay. Well, I knew I was going to ayahuasca.
I mean, my brain was in a little bit of a different place.
Right.
Because, you know, I'm at work and work is just chaotic bullshit. You know, the company I'd worked for forever was being sold to another company. I had a fallout with the past owner and I'm handling the transition and laying people off. And it was just
laying people off that had worked there for the whole life of the company.
Yeah. I mean, just... It was awful. It was an awful time. So I have to do that and cut my antidepressants off at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, and if you remember, I lost my shit on one guy.
Yeah.
In particular, he just pushed all my buttons and I screamed at him, told him to get the hell out of the building. You know, that
right.
Very unprofessional. That's not something I would normally do. But yeah, so the 1st of May, I started trying to get off the antidepressants, went from 40 to 20. And I think we did that for a week and then felt fine. You know, I think it was just edgy.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was 5 milligrams at a time.
Yeah. So I think you were doing like 10 milligrams, 5 milligrams. I'm like, we tapered it.
Yeah.
And then what started happening?
Well, so once it became go time, I think we're at around, got it down to like 5 milligrams. Does that sound right?
Mm-hmm.
Brain shocks. And if you've never had a brain shock, it's the most excruciating, fucked up thing that can happen to your brain. It is literally like you stick your finger in a light socket, and we've all done that, right? Where we've all been shocked by something, and we know how startling that is, and we know how it shoots that volt up like your arm or whatever. Mm-hmm. This happens. It's the same, probably 10 times worse, and in your brain.
Yeah, and from my perspective, I mean, I'm watching you get the brain shocks. I'm watching you...
Can't sleep.
Right, I'm watching you sit at the edge of the bed, almost catatonic, like, and depressed. And I've known you 15 years.
Yeah.
You know, we're kind of approaching the 16-year mark. And I've never seen you really depressed, not like that. And I've never seen you talk about wanting to end your life.
Yeah, which I was never suicidal until that. I mean, never had a suicidal thought ever.
Yeah, and crying. There was there was a lot of crying of, you know, I can't go on. I can't do this, you know.
Well, there was lots of crying you didn't see too, probably, because there was a lot in the shower.
Well, it was just, it was terrifying.
There was a lot of getting up at 2 o'clock in the morning because I was just tired of laying in bed with brain shocks. They hit me at night a lot. They'd hit during the day a little bit, but at night it was bad.
Yeah, it was terrifying to watch you go through this. And I felt so bad. We were trying to go to the gym.
Yep.
You know, and
I found some cannabis. I was trying to smoke myself better. That didn't work. I didn't even touch it.
So about this time, we found an ayahuasca center. We knew that you had to be off antidepressants 6 weeks, 100% off antidepressants 6 weeks before we went. And now the clock is ticking. And I think at that point you were just like, I'm getting off of them. I think you just kind of went cold turkey, which we don't recommend anybody doing that.
Well, just right before I went cold turkey, I had that night where I kind of had a breakdown. I got on the internet and I'm like, somebody's got to be experiencing this. You know, somebody had to have gone through this, you know?
Right.
And, cause you know, you call the doctor, you're like, I'm getting brain shocks. They're like, yeah, you're not supposed to get off those.
Right.
So I'm like, bullshit.
Yeah. Well, again,
bullshit. People get off this crap all the time.
As we're going through these experiences, we're learning something. And that is that medical doctors don't know any more than what they've told. They've never, ever really thought about any of it.
Well, you know, it was when I started experiencing the brain shocks that I had the bright idea of looking up the ingredients and the pills that I was taking.
Right.
Right.
That's right.
Lexapro, all the derivatives of Prozac, it's mostly fluoride and formaldehyde.
Right.
Look it up. CDC website. Right. You'll be blown away. Yeah. Plus all the other cells from monkeys and all sorts of weird crap that just doesn't belong in a human. You know, at least my bullshit meter tells me that.
Well, and the doctors are trained to tell you that there's no side effects to get off of them because that would be a liability. Right?
Right.
I mean, that would be in jeopardy of that branded.
I legit had suicidal thoughts. I mean, it pushes you to the edge.
Yeah. I remember one time, we had to leave the gym and we sat outside the gym where you just sat there on the bench and you were just like, you were not okay. I remember thinking, we've got to find something. And you got on these message boards and people were saying,
I got on weird chat boards.
5-HTP, right? Is that what it's called?
Yeah. So they were recommending, people were recommending nootropics basically.
Yeah.
And so 5-HTP specifically.
And,
but 5-HTP wasn't what touched it.
Right.
Cause I had 5-HTP first.
Plus you couldn't take that anyways. Cause we reached out to the facilitator of the sanctuary and he said, you cannot take the 5-HTP.
He doesn't want you taking nootropics before you work with a
nootropic.
Yeah.
But you can, but you could take fish oil.
Yeah. So I found some vague post where it was one guy. I mean, just sometimes it's like, thank you. The one guy. I didn't find anywhere else. I never found a medical doctor or anybody else going, hey, take fish oil. He recommended 2000 milligrams. I took 3. I was like, I need the help. I'm like, I bought the highest quality fish oil. I don't even think it matters. And, I felt relief that day. I'm pretty sure. I think I was down to 1 or 2 shocks. And then at that point I was like, okay, I'm off. No, I'm done. I just stopped taking them and just kept taking the fish oil. I took the fish oil for like 2 months until we went to Peru.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think antidepressants are a scam, 100% a scam. I'm sure there's people out there going, well, they work for me. Yeah. They're numbing you. Like if you're real with yourself, they're numbing you. No human beings are meant to be on these things.
Well, I'm sure cocaine also works for some people, but that doesn't mean that you should take it. You know, I'm sure that cigarettes probably work for people and same with alcohol. But again, it's not something that you should be on or something that you should take. And the side effects outweigh any sort of quote benefit. And there's other ways to get those benefits.
Right. You'll never get off of them.
Yeah. That's the only thing, I mean, like critically thinking here though. Okay. Like the only time that I don't know if that's a true statement is in regards to, you know, people that have severe mental illness, like, you know, when your brother had kind of like a schizophrenic breakdown, you know, or right. whatever you want to call it. He didn't sleep for, you know, a week. And so he went into a psychosis. You know, I don't know.
I don't know enough about that.
I don't know. Yeah. And there's a lot of, you know, shamans, when you really get into Jungian medicines, there's a lot of shamans that say that things like schizophrenia is just really an awakening. It's like a manifestation of a spiritual, it's really a spiritual disease that's happening. Mm-hmm. You'd have to work with a shaman, and there's a beautiful, if I can find it, I'll post it to this podcast, but it's basically a man that had a schizophrenic episode, or it manifested, his schizophrenia did. He went and worked with a shaman for a year and, mm-hmm. Healed himself.
Yeah.
But most of the shamans, the facilitators now, won't work with people that have been diagnosed with severe mental illness or brain damage, you know. So, well, yeah. I would say more severe mental illness. So schizophrenia, bipolar.
I wonder if the MAPS guys would work with you.
I wish that they would. And you know what? It's probably in the works. Yeah. I'm sure that they have thought about this.
They're worth looking into.
Absolutely.
I mean, the thing is, you know, if you're, you know, take my brother, for example, I think he should microdose.
Yeah.
You know, and I'd be willing to bet that he would get the same relief without any side effects that he may have. I don't know. I haven't talked to him in so long. I don't know what his side effects are, but I would bet microdosing would be a pretty safe way to go.
Yeah. I just wonder, like, how do you do that? Like this is why it's so important that the research be done. This is why it's so important, you know, that there's all these case studies that are happening to get a feel for, okay, so you have someone that has severe mental illness, like your brother does. And, you know, you start microdosing. When do you start getting off those meds? Like, how do you get off those meds? I think we're going to see a lot of the conversation transition from the benefits to, okay, how do we access those benefits when we're on these psychotropics that have severe side effects if you try and get off of them?
Yeah.
Nobody's talking really about that. The brain shocks. Nobody's talking about the suicidal feelings and tendencies. You know, you'll hear in the news every once in a while, you know, so-and-so killed themselves. They were on psychotropics. But I think really and truly what we probably didn't hear was they're trying to get off psychotropics. Mm-hmm. One of your sisters, it was like, oh my gosh, like every Christmas she'd let her medication lapse. Do you remember this?
Mm-hmm.
So it was like 3 weeks, and I don't know where she was getting her meds from, but because it was cheaper somewhere else, she just suffered for 3 weeks. And it was awful to watch her,
yeah,
well, you know, like go through what she'd have to go through.
My one friend that's a singer. Same thing.
Oh, yeah.
He'd get off of them and he was an unbearable piece of shit.
Yeah, but it's not because they're an unbearable piece of shit. It's because these medications have messed with the body's chemistry.
Right.
And now your body's, really and truly, your body's just trying to figure out what your body needs to do. But it can only work so fast. Its biochemical processes can only work so fast.
I think anybody that is on a antidepressant and wants to get off, you know, my best advice would be, you know, go buy a shit ton of fish oil and taper yourself off and find someone that's going to keep an eye on you.
Yep. That blue green algae is good stuff, you know, as well. I've heard great things about that.
I've talked to some people in the past. They've told me they had brain shocks, but I've never talked to anyone that described them the way I described them. So, you know, I don't know if that's going to happen to everybody, but it happened to me. And I was on them for 7 years.
I've heard a couple other men talk about it that way. And just the incredible amount of brain shocks.
Yeah, you just got to will yourself off of them. I mean, you just got to keep telling yourself it's okay. It's going to be better.
Right.
You know, when it's the best move I ever made. And, you know, and again, it's, you know, having done you know, mushrooms and ayahuasca and various other psychedelics, my brain feels great.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm smarter. I feel like my brain clicks faster.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I feel like, and I don't have any of the clutter. I don't, you know, do I get mad still? Sure. I get mad, but it's not a quick trigger. It's not like what it was. Do I still get depressed? Sometimes, you know, because I don't know if anybody's noticed the world. Sometimes it's depressing.
It's you a know? Little overwhelming.
Sometimes I get anxiety. Again, yeah. You know, I think those are part of my environment, you know, but it's a different kind of depression, a different kind of anxiety, you know, and it's usually something I can work my way out of. And it's not debilitating, and it's not something that, like, is literally going to take hold of your life the way it used to.
Right. And so when you were, like, thinking about going to ayahuasca, which I know that it wasn't like you really had a lot of time to think about it, because I pretty much was like, hey, I've submitted my application. I got approved. I sent my deposit. I'm going to ayahuasca. Are you coming with me?
Mm-hmm.
So I know you didn't really have a lot, and you were still trying to get off your meds, and there was a lot of turmoil happening with job.
Yeah.
Well, you had quit the one job, and then you immediately got another job with another company that found out that you were available.
Right.
Joel was a very important guy in town.
He was a big fish in a little pond for a minute.
Yeah. And so as soon as word got out that, you know, he had quit his job and given his 2 weeks, there was another big, big company that came a knocking. And you took that job, but you weren't going to start the job until after we got back from Peru, right?
Right.
Yeah. And so when you're thinking about going to Peru, what are you thinking? Like, are you thinking, you know, about anything that you wanted to work on yourself or?
No. I can confidently tell you I wasn't thinking about anything. Like, I can tell you in hindsight, you're like laughing.
Well, it's one of the things I love the most about you.
Like, I can tell you in hindsight, like, I was just trying to get through each day.
Yeah.
You know, like, life was kind of shitty. You know, I think caused between the job and the antidepressants, it was bad.
Yeah, you were literally, you know, sometimes the facilitators or shamans will say that ayahuasca, from the minute that you decide to work with the plants start to work on you.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that doesn't make a lot of sense to a lot of people that still think that time's real, but but it's the truth.
Yeah.
A lot of the times these plants will start to work on you. You start to get kind of an ahas and things like that. And you were getting your ass handed to you, like, before we went to ayahuasca.
Yeah. I mean, just, I didn't, you know, you're talking about prep for ayahuasca.
Yeah.
It's 3 days before. And I decided to fact check where we were going and make sure we didn't just give money to a serial killer. Right. I'm like, where are we going?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and I had a panic moment, like, oh my God, I haven't even researched this guy. How do I know that this is a good place? I haven't even looked. Nothing.
Well, and the way that we found him is that I found myself on Aubrey Marcus's Warrior Poet, I think is his website.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd really never been interested in looking at any of his stuff before.
Mm-hmm.
But he had this podcast and it said something along the lines of, you know, this tennis star basically just got back from ayahuasca. And then made the comment that it was his mom who had gone to Spirit Quest Sanctuary. And I immediately, you know, clicked it open, I think copied and pasted, where I listened to a little bit of the interview and I thought, well, gosh, like, if this place was safe enough for Aubrey Marcus's mom, then it's safe enough for me.
Yeah.
And so I copied and pasted. I got up on the website, you know, and at first the website's changed now, but At first, you know, it was a time machine. Yeah, it was. It's like a black, you know, black background. It's like got jaguars and like there's like sparkly nonsense going on. But what I really liked about it is that the other ayahuasca centers that I had, you know, found myself looking at their websites, a lot of it was come do ayahuasca and then swim with the pink dolphins, you know, do ayahuasca and then play in the blah, blah, blah. You know, it was like almost like. And I knew I needed a healing center. I knew I needed somebody that understood child abuse, child sexual abuse, you know, and alcoholism and PTSD and anxiety and depression and suicidal tendencies. I needed actually a professional.
Mm.
And I knew that they were somewhere in the jungle. Anyways, it pinged with me big time. And I found myself sending and submitting a letter to Don Howard. So Howard Lawler, who passed away this year. Because I get choked up.
well.
But yeah, I sent him.
He's legit one of the most important people we've ever met. So
yeah, he really was a
beautiful human being for sure.
Incredible human. That was, yeah. You know, one of the things that I've been thinking about lately, this is a tangent, but whatever. But one of the things I've been thinking about lately is consistency.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one of the things that I was so impressed with Howard was that for how many years? 20 something years?
25 years, I think.
He conducted an ayahuasca and a Wachuma ceremony every month.
He took one vacation in 25 years where he went back to the States for something.
Yeah, I can't remember. I don't know if it was to spend time with his sister and his son or something, but
yeah.
But it was, you know, that's just incredible to think that someone could be that consistent. You know, when you think about your own job, like none of us are that consistent.
No.
You know, I mean, he was like a machine.
Well, and he lived in the jungle, which. I wouldn't want to live there. It's loud. Lots of mosquitoes. It's hot. It rains all the time.
It's a beautiful place. I mean, it's beautiful, place.
But I mean, think about living there full time. And he didn't live there full time when he wasn't there. You know, he was kind of taking, you know, waiting, you know, so there was always like a maintenance week there once a month. You have to do maintenance every month or else the jungle takes it back.
Oh yeah. It will eat it.
He's living in Iquitos, which is like a third world country town. Well, like it's just.
It's a developing country. So it's very different than, you know.
Yeah. I mean, he just did a really good job for a long time. Yeah. You know, I don't know what else to say.
He's so, so impressed though by his consistency and yeah. his work ethic. It was, just renowned. And anyone that's really met Howard got to work with Howard. I mean, we just find ourselves very fortunate and I really couldn't have picked a better place than Spirit Quest for what it was that I wanted to do. And one of the things that I was the most impressed about was their weed out process, you know, mm-hmm. their application process. They required you to fill out an application and not everybody got in. And Howard was really vocal about that. So I wrote a letter that was just as heart open and detailed as possible about what it was that I wanted to accomplish at his sanctuary. And I was approved.
Yeah.
Yep. And then it was
the same thing.
Yeah. Then I was like, can my husband come too? Please.
It was funny because, you know, one of the first questions on his application is, what does a shaman mean to you?
Yeah.
And I was like,
no idea.
I have no idea.
What is a shaman?
And I just thought about it and I'm like, you're a facilitator.
Mm-hmm.
And he emails me back. He goes, that was a perfect answer. Like, cool. You know, because, you know, he's very adamant. Like, I just help facilitate. I don't do the work for you.
Right.
I'm not going to give you the magic words. You're going to do the work. I'm going to provide the space.
Yeah. I just literally lost my train of thought. I was just literally thinking about Howard, just Howard in general, but
yeah.
Yeah, I will forever be grateful for the healing that took place at his sanctuary and for, he had this way of leaving you alone, or at least this was my interpretation. His relationship with you was very different than my relationship with him, but he just pretty much left me alone. But then he'd like walk in at the exact time that you needed to hear whatever it was that he said.
Oh yeah.
And then you just stand there like, oh my God.
It's one of the most quotable people I've ever met.
Yeah. We have a friend Parker who, I think at some point he's going to write a book about him.
He has to.
But I think he's written down everything that Don Howard's ever said or anything that anyone's ever said that Don Howard has said.
Well.
Oh, that's what I was going to say is that, you know, Howard will be the first one to tell you that there is no real shaman out there that will ever tell you that they're a shaman.
Right.
They'll never, ever do that. Not one time. And they won't tell you that they're a healer either. And I think we've mentioned this one time before that anybody that's trying to sell you a bill of goods, that they're a healer, that they can heal you, or that they're a shaman, run away. That person's still working on ego stuff. Lots of ego stuff. Yeah. Also, save your money with the life coaches.
The truth. Yeah, that's funny.
Put that money, invest in yourself in another way.
Yeah. I'm like, the truth of the matter is a shaman is a facilitator. And for the most part, these plants are facilitators. You know, like yeah. Howard said, 1% is what's in the cup and the other 99% is what you do at home.
Yeah.
And that made zero sense to me until after my first cup and after I got home. And then it's like, okay, I see what I have to do.
You could say the shamans are the plants. The plants mm-hmm. are really the shamans and that they need a facilitator. So you, the facilitators need a facilitator.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep.
Well,
I think that's a good place maybe to wrap it up. And then maybe the next time we talk, we can talk more in detail about our ayahuasca experiences.
Where we're at right now is I'm ready to go to Peru.
Right.
So are you.
So am I.
So are you.
Yeah. And we'll talk about the details. So we'll get into the nitty gritty about what the travel was like, you know, where this place was like, you know, kind of we'll just kind of set it up and do it that way.
You know, and our friend Parker runs the place now and Howard's wife. Yeah. But what I was going to say is, I don't know Howard's wife and daughter very well, but you know, I can honestly tell you that Howard was one of my favorite humans.
Yeah, mine too.
And Parker's right up there.
My gosh. Like we talk about this all the time. Like he is a brother from another mother, but this man has a heart.
Yeah.
That is, oh my gosh, I don't even know what to say. Like
he
just is a hot cup of tea. Like he just makes you feel so good about yourself. You could literally say nothing to Parker and he would write you back something that you're like, you know what? I'm going to live another day.
just incredibly love the guy.
He's a walking hug.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, there's lots of great sanctuaries, so don't get me wrong. But, you know, I mean, I can highly recommend this. You show up, you're going to be safe. You're going to be well taken care of and you're going to get everything that you need.
Yeah. And they have three indigenous shamans.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll talk about this more next time, but it's sort of a traditional way. It's more of a Kush traditional way of doing, you know, ayahuasca, cause we're not sitting on like a log, which is how most people, the indigenous people do it, like on a log or on the floor.
50 mile hike up into the Andes and then just sit in a, you know, cave or a temple or whatever. Yeah. No, I mean, it wasn't a bad way to take it. That's for sure.
Yeah, no, it was great. It was an adventure. So
yeah. All right. Well,
thanks for listening.
Yeah, thanks for listening. And you know, like, share this, that, whatever. I don't even
I know we need Lexi.
We're
to
on
do
multiple
that.
Formats, and so I don't even know what to do. But you know,
let's talk about that. We're on Spotify.
Spotify should be on iTunes soon. Like we're waiting for our approval. As soon as I get things put together, we'll be on YouTube and we're on the Podbean. So,
yep.
Anyway, thanks for listening.
Yep. Have a great day.
Bye.